Time to Take a Break with Gene and Mary. Every weekday at noon Eastern Time, join us as we talk about what's on our minds. Email us at contactgeneandmary@gmail.com or interact with us on Facebook for your chance to win a participation prize every week.
Warning. I forgot the warning.
This show may include some jocularity and some knowledge accidentally. Warning, because it might.
We
definitely have some of that.
Hi, Gene. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, forgetful.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I joined the team.
Oh, I tell you what, if I can't laugh at myself, who can I laugh at? We have a word of the day today, and it's not forgetful, and it's not klutzy cat.
Okay.
It's legacy.
Oh, okay. Legacy.
A legacy is something handed down by a predecessor.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Like, you know, the house at Green Gables.
Could be, yeah.
It's a legacy of the Wells family.
It is.
And I would hope that in my aftermath, when I've decided to transition out of this physical plane, that Be Unique will be a legacy for future generations. Mm-hmm. That's my plan.
It's on its way. We're already, you know, Be Unique magazine, already worldwide.
Indeed. And speaking of world, this topic for today comes from another part of the world called Japan.
Japan, okay.
You ever hear of Japan?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Madea family of Japan and what their legacy has been to the world.
Okay.
They were a Japanese samurai clan, so that was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As my son would say, that was a minute ago.
Yeah.
They ruled most of the Hokuriku region from the end of Sengoku period through the restoration of 1868. So about the time that William Twining Wells and his wife Nora were trying to think in terms of what can we do for Nora's continuing pneumonia, how do we get her healthy, they were making trips down to Florida. And they found out that the Florida climate agreed with her.
Yeah.
And a few years later, they built the house that we call Green Gables.
Mm-hmm.
So around that time was when their ruling period ended. They were the dominant warrior family in West Central Japan before the 16th century. So they ruled for a couple hundred years.
Wow, yeah.
They had actually gained prominence in the 8th or 9th century. So even more than a couple hundred years. Was one of the most powerful samurai families in Japan, and second only to the Tokugawa clan in rice production.
Oh my, that's
in fief size. What's a fief?
A fief is like a kingdom, let's say.
Okay.
Equivalent to a kingdom, let's say.
They became daimyo. I don't know what daimyo means. Do you?
Daimyo?
Daimyo. It's a Japanese word, I believe.
It's a leadership type of thing.
During the Edo period. They ruled the Kaga domain from their headquarters in Kanazawa from 1583 until the Meiji Restoration in 1868. Now, when you think of samurai, what do you typically think of?
Well, I grew up in the 70s, so I think of John Belushi. You think of it as like a warring class of individuals.
I think of warriors, and I also think of their intricate armor that they used, you know, their armor, their headpieces. A lot of it was meant to intimidate, but a lot of it was meant to protect them from other warring clans.
Mm-hmm.
But art, cuisine, architecture, and culture flourished under the patronage of the Maeda family. These were daimyo lords who ruled what is now Ishikawa Prefecture. The buildings, gardens, crafts, and food of the day of the area are today inseparable from their legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we had talked about the Maeda gardens as being among some of the most beautiful gardens. They were, let's see what else have I got. Barb did a great research on this for us. It's one of the more lengthy ones that she's given us. And you know what I didn't do? I didn't start a timer. Never mind. the early modern Japan, early modern,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I guess the modern era, but the early part of it, was divided into more than 250 autonomous domains that all worked under the authority of the shogun in Edo, which is now Tokyo. The Kaga domain corresponded roughly to present-day Ishikawa, and the Toyama prefectures, that was ruled by 14 heads of the Maeda family until the abolition of the shogunate and system of domains at the beginning of the Meiji era. Kaga was the wealthiest domain and its leaders were high-ranking officials, even though they were a long way from home. That was interesting. I never really understood how pre-electronics, pre-technology, how these kings and warlords kept their kingdoms under control and communicated. I mean, they communicated sometimes by messengers who walked or ran on foot. Mm-hmm. They didn't have even the Pony Express that we had here in the United States during the 18th century, 18th, 19th century.
Yeah.
So how did they maintain control and keep everybody where they belonged?
Well, you mean, my studies of Japan are a little bit limited, Asia a little bit limited, but I know that it probably worked the same way as it did in medieval Europe, is if you were the king and you got control of the food, you controlled everything.
Interesting,
As long as they controlled the food, then they had to do it.
They have to come to you for food. That makes sense.
That's pretty good.
And it says that the wealth of this era was determined by the amount of rice and other crops they could produce.
Yeah, they owned and protected the food. You had to eat, you had to come to them. And that's kind of...
Well, they used for their currency dry unmilled rice called koku. Kaga's official yield of 1 million koku was more than any other domain. So they had very fertile soil, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was their thing, you know. It's like the cranberries in the northeastern United States, or I guess mangoes in where Southeast Asia.
Well, it's such a point of pride that they still use a word frequently in Ishikikawa called, oh boy, I'm going to butcher this. I need Anna East here. She knows Japanese.
She does, yes.
Hayakomagonku koku or something. But that connects them to high-class cuisine and luxury crafts. Mm-hmm. They have a festival every June celebrating the arrival of Maeda Toshii, the first Kaga lord. So a domain's capital was centered on the castle of that region. The Maedas made all their samurai live right there with them in Kanazawa. So the samurai estates occupied nearly 70% of the city's land. Mm-hmm. And some of the areas retained the atmosphere of the early 1600s. Wow.
Yeah.
They had 8 houses of Kaga.
Studying about in Japanese history, we had the option in this one class to read this classic novel, an English translation of The Tale of Genji.
You've mentioned that before.
Oh, it was just a life experience. Huge, like 1,300-1,400 pages, very kind of complicated. But
What was the life of Genji about?
Well, it was a considered medieval Japan back in like the 10th, 11th century. But it was just basically a glimpse into the culture of the time, the aristocracy. I enjoyed how much they really valued their flowers. The wisteria was
yes.
a huge part of their culture.
And, you know, we did a show earlier, last year, I guess, about some of the most beautiful gardens in the world.
Yeah.
And the Maeda family garden is one of them. Mm-hmm. It's called Kinrokuin, one of Japan's most famous landscape gardens. And it's notable for its harmonious use of the garden design elements. Now, it evolved from a much smaller predecessor that the Maedas commissioned outside the gates of Kanazawa Castle in the 17th century. Mm-hmm. Subsequent generations expanded and renovated the garden until it reached its current size in the mid-1800s. Inside the castle gates, the lords made another garden into a more private retreat, but both gardens are now open to the public.
You know, it's interesting that the gardens did that function in medieval Japan, and I'm thinking in my studies in Europe, they used the cathedrals and such to do the same function. Wealthy people were basically big sponsors of the local church, and
yes.
when they built their churches, they gave the churches these riches and wealth and the stories and the stained glass windows and things that your average person wouldn't ever experience, but they kind of gave it to them as a gift, like these gardens are to those folks.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I guess the money goes where the people are and what they're interested in. promoting.
Yeah, kind of a symbiotic relationship that developed amongst humans over the last 30,000 years.
Yes.
One person locks up the food, the other people want it. You work things out.
Yeah, you have to make it where it works.
Yeah.
And the Maidas, they held the food, they managed the food, and they pretty much told people, well, you're going to eat this, you're going to come look at these pretty flowers. We think these are the good flowers you should look at. We think these are the theater shows you should do, because they had the No Theater that was one of the places where ordinary citizens were encouraged to learn. It was popular among laborers, which is unusual of that era. Hmm. The place where they said no falls from the heavens, and the carpenters chanted while working on rooftops. Right? And chanting is an important part of human culture too, because it helps to ground you and it helps to create a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And if you know, I hate to even think about it, but well, like the Vikings or any rowboats, and even today when we have the long rowboats, mm-hmm. people they chant, or in the military you sing cadence mm-hmm. to keep rhythm and to keep you going.
Yeah, well, I know when I was in marching band, we'd play music, but we always would use the drum in between the songs to keep everybody
on the same beat. Keep the rhythm.
So I just do a little dance. I couldn't help myself. Sometimes it just sits in me.
The dance comes out.
Got to come out.
The dance has got to come out. You know what else has got to come out?
Oh, okay. Well,
we got to come out of break, y'all.
I want to thank everybody for joining us today on Take a Break with Gene and Mary. Join us every weekday at noon Eastern time, please. And check out all of our great shows at Be Unique Radio at BeUnique.org.
That's BUNEKE.org.
And that's it for today. See y'all.
Bye, everybody.